Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds, featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I am your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team, here to lead conversations and to shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. Maybe you've been listening for a while, or this is your first episode. If you like what you hear, would you do us a favor by rating and reviewing us on iTunes? This is a fantastic way to tell us you enjoy what we are creating. Also, if you want more MTSS resources, sign up for our weekly newsletter using the link in our show notes and check out our website for all the blogs and guides you would ever need about MTSS. Supporting English language learners in today's diverse classroom requires thoughtful strategies and systems that address their unique needs. In today's conversation, we're joined by Dr. Claudia Rinaldi, an expert in MTSS and English language learners, how that melds together. And we're going to explore how schools can create culturally responsive frameworks for ELL success, from practical interventions to overcoming challenges. Dr. Rinaldi shares invaluable insights to help educators make meaningful impact. And I'm so glad to have her here. Welcome.
Thank you, Larissa. I appreciate that and always love to talk to educators out in the field and hopefully give them some good ideas.
Awesome. Well, first of all, I like to just start most of our conversation just something kind of fun and interesting. And I'm curious about if you've recently had a unique cultural experience.
A recent cultural experience. Actually, I did. So last night, yesterday in the afternoon, I did a training for an organization of special education administrators. And I shared in the conversation that I love to use idioms, but I'm really terrible at them because I'm still an English learner myself. And after the session, one of the administrators that was there came and he goes, "Thank you for saying that because I am exactly the same way. I love to use them and I use them wrong every single time." So I thought that was like a really good cultural connection with him. He was also a Latino man. And so I was like, okay, I'm not the only one that experiences this, wanting to use something that is really hard in the English language. So, yep, that would be one.
Well, and I think about that when I taught seventh graders, I taught figurative language and we would talk about idioms and I would have students bring in sayings that their parents or their grandparents would use, or just their family's unique ones. And, you know, the students that are from other cultures usually had some unique ones or like something that was in another language. And I always thought that was really fun to kind of break down how much of idioms are really like passed down sayings or things that we think are common knowledge, but actually, you know, generationally they can change and then culturally they can be different. And so it's really fun to explore those of what things that aren't literally what they say.
Yeah, no, that is definitely true, you know, and I don't know why they're so fun to use, but I feel like everybody wants to use them. And so I fall into that category.
Yeah. Well, that's a really fun, a unique one. So we'll start, you know, many of our listeners probably are familiar with MTSS and English language learners, but I would love for you to talk a little bit about how MTSS uniquely benefits English language learners.
So I think what I love about MTSS is that it's a proactive and preventive framework. So it really helps us to guarantee that tier one includes ESL for multilingual learners and English learners. And so, you know, in the past, when we didn't have a framework that guaranteed that, then the students might just be taken out during that that time of, you know, core instruction. And so I think this offers a real good venue for that.
Yeah, that preventative piece of it is really key, especially I would say when you want to make sure that you're being supportive of those needs of students, that you don't want them to get further down the line and struggle more. So the sooner you can intervene, the better. So for you, what are some of those common challenges that you're seeing schools face when implementing MTSS for ELL students? And maybe even talk about too, I know that you work with a lot of like pre-service teachers probably as well. Talk about maybe a little bit of some of those challenges you're seeing, you know, newer educators go in and face when it comes to MTSS and ELL students.
Yeah, so let's begin with the teachers and what I see as lacking in the schools or what they're struggling the most. And I think that is one in general, and the NTSS motto is progress monitoring. And then when we're talking about multilingual learners or English learners, then it is also not only monitoring the academics, but monitoring the English language development. And so we really don't have a tool to do that. And so I like to talk about the importance of informal assessment to be able to do that. Because we do have tools, we just haven't really thought about how we could use them for progress monitoring in a way that it would give you information across different contexts. And what I mean with that is, when the students are struggling, we want information from the general educator, but if they're also seeing the ESL teacher in smaller settings, you might be seeing English proficiency language developing at different rates in different contexts or different classrooms, right? So in a large classroom, the EL is not likely to interact. And but in the ESL classroom, in a smaller group setting, they are more likely to interact. So you're able to kind of monitor that language development happening because they're willing to take more chances, right? So I think progress monitoring is really a key area that we're not using, and we're over relying on tests, right? Or benchmarks that are just looking at academics and that are looking at achievements rather than looking at what we could do informally in the classroom that actually informs instruction, not just whether they meet eligibility or criteria for a disability.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. You're right, because it is hard to monitor that if you don't have a really good tool for that. I can see that as being a challenge. Now, for those students that you're seeing, or newer to educators, I know that you spend time with pre-service teachers. What are you seeing as the challenge going into schools now versus, I mean, maybe how it's been in the past?
Yeah, so that's a good question because I think there's multiple areas that I see. So let's say 10 years ago, some of my students would go out to do observation hours or full practicum, and they may have or may have not had any English learners in their classroom. However, I think now they have multiple English learners in their classroom. But the challenge now is that teachers are still not doing anything or consistently doing something unique to support that English learner in the general education classroom or the special education classroom. So it makes it very difficult for them to see what we're teaching them in the college classroom and the teaching bilingual learners class see in actuality or in practice in the classroom. And so they come back and they may not see the English learner or may not know enough about it. They may not see like vocabulary being taught in ways that provides access and acknowledgement of language, of their native language or language one, what we call. So it's really hard for them to connect that research to practice when they're not really seeing those practices from the educators themselves in the classroom. The success that I've had is when I've sent them to work with ESL teachers. And then they're able to kind of see how they support those students. And so in that case, it's a little bit better. But even at that point, they don't see the progress monitoring piece because they're not doing it, right? Everything is anecdotal, and it's anecdotal, it's nice, but it really doesn't tell you how much growth is happening or how much, language is growing across the different levels of English language proficiency.
Yeah. Well, and I know that from my time when I became an ESL certified teacher, I know that meant that I didn't receive that necessarily that support from an ESL teacher in my classroom. So I became certified. So, I taught English language arts. And so it merely became up to me to sort of make some of those interventions and to and accommodate for some of those needs in my classroom. And I think what's really interesting too is that I also then became someone to advocate to my other core team teachers, right? Of like, here's the student, here's a way to accommodate for that student in your classroom, or here's another just added parts of vocabulary. And it pushed me then to also help inform the
Yes.
staff and making sure that we were all practicing the things that are good practice for those students that are learning English. 'Cause sometimes I think it's another layer to what you're already doing, but many times some of those things were interventions or differentiation for students that also the other students in my classroom. Like it actually benefited everyone when we implemented some of those things. And so I think it's really unique to say, to really kind of identify of like an ESL teacher probably can only do so much when they're, you know, if they're not within the general classroom all the time, it's hard, much harder than to get those teachers on that on board. So there is probably that need for some education of the staff as well.
I think one idea would be like to think of all of us need to think of us ourselves as consultants, right? Like the general education as a consultant on the core curriculum and meeting the standards. The ESL teachers are consultant and helping all the other teachers to kind of understand the English language proficiency and English language development and infusing that into the curriculum, right? And the special teacher is the consultant on, you know, the individually designing instruction for students that are struggling. But I think we all think that we know the same things. And so we don't make use of, you know, our own particular preparation and training and experience. And so, you know, people that have multiple licensures like you did, you know, like ELA and ESL, then now become these big advocates. But we could be having structures in place where those three professionals are meeting regularly, like every week, to kind of review the progress of those particular students who are in learning English and those that are dually identified with learning English and having a disability, right? So I think we need to have teachers think of themselves more as consultants of other teachers and bringing in their own expertise and not really be scared of that, but really say, no, look, this is kind of like what you have to do. You need to start every lesson with vocabulary because they don't have the context. And, you know, let them use their native language because that helps them connect the concepts in their mind, right? Let them use their funds of knowledge and see how the languages work together or how they don't work together. So thinking about being more explicit about those it's a really key aspect of, you know, work that we could do, but that we could think of more as consultancy across each other's roles.
I really like that idea of just being, you're a consultant for what your different role. And, you know, and that plays so much part of like the idea of MTSS and the collaboration that's needed for that system to be in place and how much everybody in a school benefits when the teachers collaborate, when your staff works together, you know, right. That's the collective efficacy that we all hope to achieve.
Absolutely. That's why I don't understand some schools that don't provide common planning time for those educators. You know, I think sometimes we get stuck on the way things were done and not think outside the box. So usually when I talk to leaders, administrative leaders or principals, I'm like, you need to think outside the box. Like if you haven't been able to have the teachers meet more than once a month, other schools are meeting twice a week. So what are they doing? You know, how can you think about organizing, you know, the support for that particular small percentage of students so that there is an opportunity for the teachers across the different areas, regular education, ESL, bilingual education, and special ed to be, you know, addressing the needs of the students, right? Because I think in MTSS, one of the things that, you know, I see schools doing is they might purchase an intervention program. Let's just matter of discussion, say, you know, Lexia or the Gillingham, right? Which are great, but they weren't designed for that population. However, the practices that are used could be easily applied if we preempt the vocabulary and provide oral language practice while you're delivering those. So it's an adjustment, but for that population, it will work. It's just we're giving it to them as if they were monolingual students. So, you know, that's the idea that would come out if you're sitting in a group of cross-disciplinary, multidisciplinary teachers that are able to share and say, well, tell me a little bit more about Wilson Learning. You know, what exactly do you do during that intervention? Oh, well, it needs context, right? Is there any vocabulary that we could pre-introduce so that when you use the strategy, the students are like, oh, okay, I could connect that to what I know in my fund of knowledge.
Hmm. Well, and I do think that part of that with the learning other languages is, you know, providing the background knowledge, because like we talked about in the beginning about, you know, idioms, how they're different in different cultures, like a student that's new English language learner, you know, there's that background knowledge that needs to happen as well. Yeah. So that happens with the vocabulary that can be really helpful to make those connections. And even providing that background knowledge in their native language is really important as well. You know, I remember it as a ELA teacher, there were concepts that I knew that students that were really new to were our new arrivers or newcomers, they didn't have necessarily the English skills yet to read the kind of text or the level of text that we had in class. And so I really strove to find translated versions in their native language so that they could practice the skill of summarizing or practice the skill of identifying a main idea. Because that was what I was focused on, not so much the, you know, them doing it in the English part. And I think that that really helped me think through what are the ways, what are the skills that I'm wanting them to do? And does it have to be right now? Does it have to be in English? And so, you know, in congruence with the ESL teacher too, like trying to support students in that way, can really help them and help them feel confident in what they're doing too, and recognize that they aren't totally lost in everything that we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, they have assets that they bring. It's just we really haven't asked them, right? I mean, they may have read Shakespeare, or they may have read, you know, whatever novel that you're thinking about, right? Mango Street or whatever they would be in middle school. But, you know, we oftentimes just see them as not having or as a deficit perspective, right? So, you know, it was great that you would try to find the translated versions of it. We could also find translated versions at different reading levels, right? So high interest, low readability kind of text that might be even similar or, you know, as close to your text as it could be so that they can have access to it. I remember being in high school and I had been here in the US for 4 years and we were reading like an old version of, you know, Shakespeare. And I'm like, oh my God, I thought I knew English and then I felt all bad again because I just couldn't read the old English. And you know, had somebody given me a version that was a bit more easier, the goal was to understand the story and to learn from the author, you know, like I didn't have to read it in all English, you know, I could have seen the only English, but also been able to get through the story. So it's wonderful that you did that and, you know, evidence that you are a good teacher. So that's really wonderful to hear. We need more of that.
Well, and I think that you brought up a good point about that oftentimes there's sort of an over-identification of students that are learning English because we don't necessarily, maybe there is sort of that misconception that because they don't speak English, they don't have the skills. And so I think that we can either over-identify or under-identify because we don't necessarily know where their skills are at. How do you think that schools could use maybe MTSS to ensure that we have more accurate identification and support for those students?
You know, I think one aspect that the schools can do is nationally, there's about 13% of students that are students with disabilities, right? Now, obviously, in urban districts, that might get up to 20, 21%. And in suburban districts, it might be closer to that 11%, right? But at least knowing those statistics kind of helps us to then identify nationally about 13% of that 13% are dually identified students, right? So at least keeping track of your incidence levels is really important because, you know, if, for example, your incidence of disability was 13%, but then your multilingual learners with disabilities were at 19%, you know, it might make you think back and say, are we over-identifying? Or the opposite, it could be under-identifying, right? And then the other aspect that I have schools think about is, you know, when you collect your universal screening data or your benchmarking data for MTSS, you know, and you get referrals, right? So once you get the data, break down that data into who are the subpopulations. So, you know, for example, you could get a school that has about 80% of students at grade level. Great. They're doing phenomenal in MTSS. That's what we want, right? About 80% benefiting from that tier one instruction at grade level. That's great. But if you break down that 20%, and most of them are level ones and twos of English learners and or dually identified students, then it allows you to see, like, what are we giving them that is uniquely different to their need? Rather than thinking, oh, 20% need an intervention, let's just buy a package intervention. Everybody gets the same intervention and that should work. So, you know, kind of desegregating the data by English language level and by English language level and disability allows us to kind of break down and think about as a team, multidisciplinary team, like, what are we doing specifically to do that, right? So, for example, like if most of them are level ones or twos, you would give some sort of a different intervention than if it was level fours, right, or level fives that are closer to that native language, let's say, equivalency, right? So, you know, I often recommend one is district-wide, take a look at your overall numbers and incidence of the areas of disabilities and your multilingual population, but then also by school level, kind of monitor where that data breaks down by the segregated groups. And now with, you know, platforms like Branching Minds, that's very easy to do because that information is there. And then you can bring it into having conversations around, you know, well, are we doing the right interventions before we even refer, right? Or, you know, if we're looking at special education as a tier three intervention, then are the students getting that native language support? Because most of them are level twos and threes that are getting special education services, and the special education is only in English. So what can we think about differently with the ESL teacher and the SPED teacher to kind of bring together so that we, one, ensure that ESL is supported in that classroom, but two, that the intervention also allows for acknowledgement of translanguaging, the use of native language and the funds of knowledge, kind of that asset thinking that we were discussing a little bit ago.
Yeah. Well, and I think really it is like looking closely at that data, you know, like we know that data plays such a significant role in MTSS. And I think drilling down to those, I mean, that's really where you can get some valuable insights when you drill down to those subgroups and just say, are we serving them to the best of the ability? And I think for district leaders, that means making decisions about resources. And, you know, if you're looking across the schools of just like, if one school has a larger ESL population, maybe they need more resources there than other schools. And so I think it's important to really take a look at all of that data.
And what kind of EL population, right? Because I would say that most schools are thinking they're keeping the overall track number. But again, if you have a newer population that's coming in and a lot of them are the lower levels of English, you might need an extra staff member and you might need them to be more strategic around that language development level, you know. Whereas like in another district that is more urban, they just get everything, right? Then, you know, you might look at it differently. But I think we just haven't thought about how strategic we could be in breaking down the data to give us more guidance on how to allocate resources, whether it be personnel or intervention kind of thing.
So you talked a little bit about some practical strategies earlier. I would love to provide our audience with a few more practical strategies and tools that teachers could use immediately, and not just teachers, but just educators in supporting ELLs within the MTSS framework. Anything that comes to mind that we haven't mentioned already?
Oh, yes. I love this question. So there are a couple of research-based practices that keep coming up and that I love for various reasons. So one is, it's called peer sister learning strategies. It is actually a peer tutoring program, but it has a very structured nature to it. It's at a Vanderbilt University. There's a training module that is an hour and a half right out of the IRIS module website. And what I love about it is that it engages students in literacy activities or math activities that are peer-based diets, right? And it has a script so that it helps the students be able to be paired very strategically. So for example, you wouldn't pair the highest student with the lowest student or the highest student with the EL1 level student, but you were able to strategically pair them and they tell you how to do that so that, you know, they have a benefit for both of them. But the scripts that I carry there allow for the practice of the language and the use of that academic language, right? So it's what we call oracy. So it's the use of that interpersonal language happening in the diet around academic language use, right? Mm. So, and that could be an intervention that is class-wide. That could be two or three times 20 minutes, part of your tier one core instruction, but it could also be in your tier two intervention. What I also love about it is it does not require a curriculum. You use the curriculum that you have in your core instruction. So I often talk about how I hear a lot of districts saying, oh, we want to buy an EL curriculum, and there's many out in the market. And I always say, okay, so now the students who are learning English need to learn English, one. They also need to learn the curriculum in the core general education classroom, two. And now you're going to introduce an EL curriculum. That's three. So we're creating more work for them, and it's often disconnected. So the strategy is a strategy instruction rather than a package curriculum where you could use the content that you use in the classroom, whatever classroom. It could be history, it could be science, it could be ELA, it could be math, to be able to help them to improve in their vocabulary and oral language practice, which is how we learn language and the best way to learn academics, because we know that teaching others is the best way to learn your academics, right? And for any monolingual or bilingual student. So in these diets, you know, the stronger student starts first and the lower student is second, but now you have a role model doing it and you have a script so the student is able to participate at their own English language development. So that is probably my go-to strategy. And again, it could be something that I watch for an hour and a half. I learn how to do it. And the golden nugget is in the training of the students. Once you train them, you could do it in any subject. So if you're an elementary school teacher, again, you could do it in history, science, ELA. If you're a high school or middle school teacher, you could see how you customize it to your content area. So that is one area that I really like, again, because it is flexible enough as a strategy. It's been researched since 2000, so it's about 25 years that it's been around. And it helps all levels, including students with disabilities. So that is my go-to strategy for those reasons.
I love that. And I'm like picturing in my head, I was like, I could have used that in my classroom so easily. And I think that's a great one, especially those peer-based activities, the middle school level when they're so social and so, you know, like interacting with their peers is a big deal. I know there's always layers and personalities you have to consider. It's a magic trick to get partner work really working well. But I think that that's a fantastic strategy. I love that it's research-based. I think
what we want is the kids to talk, right? If they talk around the academics, they're learning. So it's okay for them to talk in the classroom. You don't have to have a quiet classroom, because actually the best classroom for the English learners is one that is full of conversation.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. That's a really great strategy. Okay. So my last question really is like, looking ahead, what are some hopes that you have for some advancements in how we can support English language learners in schools?
So my hope for the future is that every time I talk, people take the idea of using the WIDA CANDU indicators or other English language development indicators and use them informally to track language across different contexts. So most often, like if you go to those CANDU descriptors, you can hand select which areas you want to see your student develop. And I would engage in that multidisciplinary observation kind of tracking, right? So the general teacher checks like, yes, I saw Claudia doing this. I saw her saying this. I saw her reading this. But also the ESL teacher and the special ed teacher, if they're multilingual learners with disabilities. Because this is all about data, and what we need is more data to tell us about the whole child. And the whole child is experiencing a language explosion as they're learning English, in addition to an academic kind of learning experience, right? But we're not monitoring, and what we then end up thinking is that they just can't learn. So I'm hoping that when teachers get together and they share their chart of how language is developing, they're like, how are you doing that in your class that Claudia is doing that? And that they engage in conversations about how to get the students to show what they know so that we're seeing what they're learning rather than what they can't do. And oftentimes we end up focusing on what the student can't do and not look at what the student is able to do.
Yeah. I love that. And I think that's right. I think it's important to think about their strengths and build from there as well. So, well, thank you so much for popping in for this conversation and sharing your expertise. I'll definitely share in the show notes the ways that people can contact you or your resources as well. And I know that you've participated in a couple of webinars here at Branching Minds, so I'll share some other resources from you as well. So,
all right, Larissa, thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thanks for listening to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. Go ahead and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget, if you are enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcasts on iTunes? This helps others find our podcasts and lets us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchyminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Branchy Minds.